This episode of Section D was first broadcast on the 24th of September 2013 on Monocle 24. Section D is brought to you in association with Lexis. Hello and welcome to Section D, the weekly design hour here on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Morris. Coming up today, it's a London Design Festival special focus. We were zipping around town last week, meeting designers, organisers and exhibitors at the 11th edition of the event. We started, rather appropriately, with a cup of tea in the Monocle Cafe with LDF founder Sir John Sorrell.
This is the most creative community in the world, and if you're a creative person, you've got to be in a creative community, you can't operate otherwise. And I don't know another city in the world that is like that.
Then we headed to Waterloo, to the studio of lighting designer Michael Anastasiades and his collection of pieces for Italian manufacturer Floss.
I'm very much interested in improvisation. I guess for the more adventurous consumer, it would be nice to see what they would come up with.
From there, Section D set up shop at Design Junction, one of the week's most exciting trade shows. We met a whole host of designers there who were presenting their wares.
I really enjoy people's work where you can see that they're so kind of passionate about making and not just the design part.
That's all here on Section D with me, Tom Morris, on Monocle 24. As you've just heard, this is a London Design Festival special. And where better to kickstart our coverage than to hear what inspired the man who co-founded the event, Sir John Sorrell. The chairman of LDF, Sir John's 40-year career ranges from the creation of one of Europe's biggest and most successful design businesses to his current role as a UK business ambassador. I caught up with Sir John during the festival to discuss this year's event, the challenges of his role, and what inspired him to establish the festival all those years ago.
Oh, the festival's changed enormously in terms of scale and in terms of its international audience. So 11 years ago when we started, there were 40 events in London. There are now hundreds, way over 300, and we think about 400,000 visitors, 60,000 people from abroad. So it's much, much bigger. But also, I think the quality's gone up, and often that doesn't happen when you get scale, but I think that's the case.
What was the original genesis of it? I mean, what was your vision for London Design Festival 11 years ago?
It was actually 1994. It's a long time ago. Yeah. I was chairman of the Design Council. And I was looking at different things that the council might do. And I had a shopping list, which I've still got written in pencil. And one of them was the London Design Festival. But I won't go bore you with all the details, but other things overtook it. And I revived the idea in 2002 when I was asked to do the Theo Crosby Memorial Lecture at the Globe Theatre. And the subject was the creative cities. And I talked about London being the world's greatest creative city, and I said, it's about time we had a great design festival. And everyone said, when are you going to do it? So I was kind of, it's an old saying, isn't it? Put your money where your mouth is. So I talked to a few friends, including Ben Evans, who had worked with me at the Design Council, and to cut a very long story short, we spent a year planning it and did the first one in 2003.
I mean, what are your favourite events coming up over the next couple of days? What are you most excited about seeing? There's a lot to see.
Well, of course, it started last weekend and it runs through to the end of the coming weekend. Some of the things I've seen which I would really recommend, I went to the opening of Endless Stair, which is this extraordinary structure sitting outside Tate Modern, and by Lex O'Reich and by Clark of Arup. It is a magnificent piece technically, but also it's so much fun. And if you climb it, you get these great views across the Thames and over to St Paul's. And it's based on an Isha drawing. So it's about 15 interlocked staircases which don't go anywhere except to this up to this viewing platform. Enormous fun. I would also very definitely recommend going to the V&A, Victorian Albert Museum, which is packed full of different installations for the festival, including a 30-metre-long chandelier by Omar Arbel, which I think is the longest, biggest chandelier creation in this country for 100 years. And that's just inside the entrance. Just walk in, look up. Brilliant.
Wow.
more things in the Vienna. I'd go to Future Map, which is an exhibition of work by students at UAL, which is at the London College of Communication at the Elephant and Castle. I would nip into the Soane Museum to see an installation by Most. Soane Museum's always beautiful.
Yeah.
And this is an absolutely lovely intervention, which is in the Soane Museum breakfast room, and it's called the Cabinet of Curiosities.
Of
don't miss that. And then there's the big blockbuster, the big showcase trade shows, 100% Design Junction tent and all those. But I think you have to discover for yourself. And I would recommend, look at the website, get hold of the guide. The guide's about an inch thick. There's so much in it. And plan your program.
And of course, last night was the Design Oscars.
Design Oscars, as great. Thank you. I like that phrase. I love it. The London Design Medal. Well, it's seventh year of the medal. And it was absolutely wonderful evening. The London Design, it was very special. The medal went to the London Design Medal went to Peter Saville, and the Lifetime Achievement Award went to Dieter Rams, who came over from Germany to accept it. And it was wonderful because we sat Dieter opposite Terence Conran, who received that same award last year.
Wow!
They're exact contemporaries. They know each other. They've known each other forever. And I was very privileged to talk to Dieter a little bit. And I was absolutely fascinated because I asked him what his hobbies were. You know, people think, you know, great designers like him don't have hobbies. They think just designing beautiful watches and furniture. Do you know what he loves? He loves gardening, and he does bonsai trees.
Really?
He's got as he says, it's not a Japanese garden, but it's a European version of a Japanese garden. And nobody else is allowed to clip his bonsais. Can you imagine how beautiful that must be? He's an extraordinary man, a hero for so many designers, as indeed Terence is, so that was a very special evening. And we gave the Design Entrepreneur Award to David Constantine, who is another extraordinary man, I think a genius, and who, you know, I've known David for a very long time, and you know, he says, well, I try to help people who are worse off than I am. Well, goodness me, he's a hero of mine too. So it was a fantastic evening, and it followed on from the other Oscars, as you call them, over the years. And I think it's now it's a sort of very desirable award.
What do you think kind of sets the London Design Festival and just the whole sort of design week in general on the sort of international calendar, which is pretty jam-packed now? What makes it unique?
Well, the calendar didn't used to be jam-packed. Do you know how many festivals and design weeks there were in the world before we started, 2003? Well, since we started, there's 100 cities created a design festival or a design week, and every single one of them have come to see the London Design Festival, and they've gone back and set theirs up. The British Council brings over every year about 30 or so design directors of other festivals. We get invited everywhere in the world to go and talk at their festivals because they see that this is where it all originated, and it's absolutely great to see them. Where does the London Design Festival sit? Well, I think it's very different. It's different for a number of reasons. First of all, we use London as the stage. That's the idea. If you think of London as the stage for a great festival of design, so it's on the streets. It's not just in a shed.
Yeah.
And a lot of design weeks or design festivals tend to take place in one big building where they put on an exhibition trade show, really. They sell stands and they do a little conference, but what I like about our festival is that it's here, there and everywhere, which was the campaign theme this year. And it's tiny, it pops up in designer studios, it's in places like the V&A, it's in museums, it's in galleries, it's in places like Monocle, it's absolutely everywhere. I don't know another where in the world that's like that. And Milan, which I love, is still very much a what you might call a trade show. It hasn't really seeped in the way that London does. And the other thing that's very different about London is that it's got such an international audience. If you look at the roll call of people doing things over this week or so, look at the names. They're from 50, 60, 70 different countries.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that makes it exciting for me. And the other thing is that we go right across the whole range of design disciplines. So again, you know, that's unusual because most people concentrate on one or two. So there's a lot of design events around the world which are about furniture, lighting, textiles. It's about it, really. But we try to cover everything: digital, engineering, architecture, fashion, a bit of everything really during the festival. And that's what, of course, is what London is about anyway, is what I believe is the greatest design city in the world.
And how important is it, or how much of a factor is it, that London is the sort of the production hub as well. This is where all the students are, the studios where, you know, young little designers are setting up shop, which doesn't happen at a lot of the other design capitals, would you say? Or
London is the home of design education. You know, we've got a 150-year history. This is where it all started after the Great Exhibition. And so design is embedded in the very nature of the city. I'm chairman of University of the Arts London, so we've got 18,000 students in London. Lots of those are from abroad, and you again get this extraordinary international mix. People come here to study, and they stay, and they set up their business. But also lots of people come here from other countries to make this their home and to set up their business, because they think this is the most creative community in the world. And if you're a creative person, you've got to be in a creative community. You can't operate otherwise. So I'm incredibly lucky because I've watched this happen. It wasn't like this when I was a young man, you know, starting out as a designer when I was 19. And it's completely different. But that is so exciting. And I don't know another city in the world that is like that.
But how important is sort of Britishness to London Design Festival? How do you sort of retain that kind of unique national appeal that sets your Design Week apart from any other cities? Is Britishness a part of that?
I see it as an international Britishness, because so many of the people, designers working in London, aren't born in Britain.
Exactly.
But the work they're doing, as far as I'm concerned, is created in Britain, and they all influence each other. So for me, the nature of British design is absolutely global. It is not kind of looking inward and closed. It is absolutely about looking at the world and the way the world wants, needs and uses design. So again, that's very exciting, but it wouldn't work if it was just being done by British-born designers. Again, that's what's so unusual and so exciting about this city.
I'm sort of thinking about the other 51 weeks of the year. What is the sort of design industry like at the moment in London?
Well, the design industry is not immune from recession. Mm. I've been through about five during my career. But the point about the design industry, it's always at the forefront of regeneration, because everyone in the end goes to designers, whatever discipline, to create the new ideas which are going to get them out of the recession and make them more money.
Yeah.
So the design industry is always a few steps in front of the game. And I'm looking around now, talking to people, and I can see some very definite signs that people are, you know, doing a bit better than they were last year, and that's a bit better than the year before. There was a very difficult period 3-4 years ago where there are a lot of redundancies and a lot of people in trouble. I think that's changing, and I think it's because in the end you've got to turn to design, because how else can you differentiate? Only one can be the cheapest, and you're certainly not going to win by putting thousands more people on a job. The only way you can be better and be best is to design.
And this week is the greatest showcase of that.
Well, I think it's a great showcase, and it, what is great is that it inspires people, stimulates, it enthuses, it inspires, and do you know what? There's a lot of happy people around in London at the moment. I see lots of smiling faces when I go to all the different design events, and design makes people happy when you get it right. Of course, when you get it wrong, it's really annoying. But this is a great time for London, I think, with design on the streets and in people's minds. It's a great inspirational period.
That was Sir John Sorrell, chairman and founder of London Design Festival. After the break, we'll hear about Italian lighting company Floss's latest collaboration. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Section D on Monocle 24, our weekly program on the best in design, architecture, graphics, and fashion. Section D is brought to you by Lexus. Lexus, creating a new chapter in amazing design, technology, and driving.
Welcome back. You're listening to a London Design Festival special edition of Section D. Italian lighting giant Floss has a long history of collaboration and has released products by everyone from Philippe Starck to Mark Newsom. At this year's London Design Festival, Floss presented two new collections by RCA-trained Cypriot designer Michael Anastasiades, which it launched during April's Euroluce show in Milan. In a minute, Floss CEO Piero Gandini tells us how the collaboration came about. But first, here's what Michael had to say about the collection when I met him at his home-come-studio-come-showroom in London's Waterloo.
We're presenting two collections here, the IC lights and string lights that were launched this April in Euroluce for Floss. Basically, they're very different in their own right. The string lights is about solving a very practical problem. You want to move a light from A to B, or you move into a house and the power is never where you want it to be. I was very much interested in the discipline of actually dividing architectural interiors. My inspiration originally came when I was sitting on a train and looking outside and looking at these cables, electricity cables connecting the pylons, and there was an amazing discipline in how perfectly parallel they always seemed. They would go for miles and miles. I love the way that how actually they divided the landscape, and I wanted to bring that into the domestic environment. So there's an amazing freedom in the sense that you get this light fixture with a length of cable and you can improvise or try to adapt the configuration that is already prescribed. So it's like drawing in three dimensions.
And they're sort of, they're really, they're lights that sort of really react to an architectural space, aren't they? I mean, when your house is studio in Waterloo and they're really sort of hung up all over, how do you sort of expect people to sort of implement these lights?
Well, the whole idea is that these lights will be sold with a booklet of different scenarios. And I guess you would look at the different scenarios and try to imagine your own space. I think there's plenty of ideas there in order to make sure that there is something there for you. So, but also I'm very much interested in improvisation. I guess for the more adventurous consumer, it would be nice to see what they would come up with.
And talk to us about the IC light. Start off with the name, first of all. There's quite an interesting story about how the name has come about, aren't there?
It's a funny story. IC stand for police codes for the perceived, it's an identification code that the police uses, the British police use. It's the perceived ethnicity of a person that is stopped by the police. So when they talk to the radio, they would stop a stranger in the street and they would look at them. They would never ask them where they are from, or, you know, they would try to describe them with this code. So IC1 is actually Northern European, IC2 is Southern Mediterranean, and then it goes on and on and on. And then there's also an IC0, which is unidentified. So this is, I find it amazing. I found this story quite fascinating in the sense that it's actually so much depends on the intelligence of that particular person, of how well traveled that person is. So it has no relevance whatsoever. And sometimes it's so completely wrong that it doesn't make sense.
And you, as you said, you presented these lights in Milan, first of all. What's it like not only sort of showing them off in your home city, but literally in your house as well?
They need to be seen in context. It's very different to see something in a fair environment, you know, especially when a company is launching all these other products. It's about the product itself. And this is so architectural at the end of the day. And I think that putting them in a home environment or in a real interior, I think, makes total sense. It was a challenge. At the beginning, I was quite kind of taken back when Piero Gandini asked me to put these lights in the house, although I had to take down all the other fixtures that I've been experimenting around with many years. But it was so easy. It's so much fun, you know, trying to come up with all these different configurations and trying to work out what would look great in the space. So I'd love to keep them.
And it really sort of brings the space alive, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And it's very much, they complement the space so well, which I guess that they could do in a lot of other interiors. And the whole idea is to show this possibilities in this environment.
So Piero, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
First of all, sort of, if you could just tell me a little bit about this, how the sort of collaboration came about.
Collaboration started as every good, long-lasting collaboration in a very, very by chance. I was in New York, I saw a piece of the personal production of Michael in a shop by Mary Moss at the time, and I asked Mary, what's this stuff, who's doing this? They gave me this name, a very strange, no, exotic name, kind of Greek guy. And then the following day, coming back, I had an appointment with Patricia Urquiola. So she said, I was in New York, I said, you know, I saw a beautiful piece from, take out a small note, you know, this guy. And he said, he's a friend of mine, I have to introduce to you. So a few months later, they were showing in Milan together in an exhibition. So she introduced me to him. This was in the old Italian palazzo, you know, with all the paintings. So of course, the suggestion of the place was great. But the way he put his few pieces in that big room were incredibly poetic. And then I saw the guy, and the guy, you know, look at Michael, he has a very, you know, gutsy body, serious face, this stuff. And there was no relation between the two things. So I was already conquered a bit. But then you look more specifically the installation, and you see, understand there is a rigor there. It's not just about elegance or poetry. There is a strong sense of a rule, of a rigor, of an engagement following a process. And then you talk to him, and he's such a sweet and nice person. So you understand that the mix is double sense. So I say, I have to do something with this guy. I was conquered from the personality. And I say, we have to meet to see what we can do. And then it was a crazy thing. I was very embarrassed because we fixed an appointment in London for lunch. I was very late. The flight was late. Everything was late. Typical kind of Italian shit, you know. And I arrived, and I was constantly texting him or calling me. Another half an hour. Finally, we met in Victoria Station. But I had no time because I had to be on the other side of the city in 20 minutes. So I said, Michael, you don't mind if you do on the cab? So we had an appointment on the cab. And it was very nice. In 10 minutes each, we told each other what we expect for such a collaboration. It was perfect.
And how involved are you in the collaborative process after sort of the decision to be made to sort of work with a new designer?
It's purely something that we are looking for. What can happen? Can happen that a guy come to our door, knocking at the door, and say, "Oh, guys, you don't know me. I'm Mr. Smith, and this is my idea for a lamp. If the lamp is great, why not? I mean, if it's really good, why not? It has to be really good. Because in that case, you don't know. If the guy was good one time by coincidence, and the rest of his life will be bad. You know, you never know. So it has to be seriously good. But this happened very, very rarely. Normally, in our histories, you can see, we look for long-lasting collaboration. When we start with a creative person, we're really looking for somebody that we trust, his vision, his talent, his values, the capacity to share with us these things in a long perspective. And so the decision is taken really, there is no committees, there are not, it's frankly personal decision for me. And when I believe in that, when I understand that they are independently from, you know, personal style or things, we have different style of designer in the company, but they are all people, they have a certain attitude to innovate. You know, you have to be a little bit a visionary and a free guy to do it. You don't care about money, you care about engagement, and you're a believer, let's say, and that's what we're looking for.
That was Piero Gandini and Michael Anastasiades there. 100% Design was one of the original design trade fairs in London and has been around since 1995. It's had tough competition in recent years, but is back on top this year with new management. We caught up with Andreas Dornbracht, CEO of German bathroom powerhouse Dornbracht, to find out what showing at London and at 100% Design means to the brand.
Well, we're very proud to show our newest introductions of this year here at the 100% Design in London, especially our beautiful sensory sky, which offers a lot of innovations in regards to taking a shower, but more than taking a shower, enjoying water in the shower. So far, the reception has been very, very well.
And this is sort of part of a whole renaissance in the bathroom industry, I guess, in towards really using amazing technology, isn't it? That's sort of a real trend that's going on.
Yes, we are certainly seeing the start of the decade of digitalization of the bathroom. It has taken some while. I mean, our daily life has already been digitalized quite a lot with a lot of consumer goods, but now it's entering into the bathroom. And there are certain reasons for that. Certainly, the importance of the bathroom has grown over the last years, mostly in an aspect of design, interior design, but now a lot of people think about more benefits. What can we do in the bathroom? And the demographic change is certainly something challenging for our industry, and we believe that new digital products will also provide new solutions for the demographic change, especially in regards to our own responsibility, the user's responsibility for preventing our own health. Certainly, this becomes more and more important, and we believe that water can be a very strong help with certain activities and with certain products to maintain our health.
So how is Dawn Brax sort of reacting to that? What sort of specific items are you producing that really react to that trend?
Well, we have designed new ways of using water in the bathroom, for example, for a skin care treatments, for massage treatments, especially with our new foot bath. There are two scenarios, reactivate and vitalization scenarios, which on the push of a button, when you sit in that, or your feet sit in that bathroom, the massage swirls are taking care of the sole of the feet. And that is really doing a lot for the skin, but especially also for blood circulation. So instead of only talking to designers, we are also now talking to therapists, to doctors, about how can water help us in our healthcare efforts. And that is not necessarily new, because already in the antique times of the Greeks and the Romans, water was used as a means of therapy, hydrotherapy. And so we are reinventing that, if I may say, for our daily use in the bathroom.
And you must sort of do the full circuit of fairs around the world. How does sort of London, and particularly 100% Design, sort of rate on the map to sort of show off your brand?
Well, London is not only important because of the, let's say, local market, which in the past we could not see any dip due to any crisis, because there's a lot of investment flowing into London from foreign visitors and foreign investors. So it's a pretty strong market for us, London itself. But also in London, we have contacts, and we are looking for even more contacts to interior designers, which are specifying and working on a lot of projects in overseas markets. A lot of big offices are here. So we are very glad that we can present our new products here to this crowd of people, if I may say so, not only for the local national needs, but also for international needs. Meaning that we focus on three, let's say four specific areas of the construction and interior design business. Number one, it's residential, of course, residential developments, but also the hospitality industry is very important for us. And not only in London, but in a lot of markets, especially in Asia, a lot of high-end hotels are being built over the next 10 years. And the London market is a very important specification market for these. And also we see in London designers which have specialized themselves on niche segments, but very interesting segments for us, that is private aviation and the super yacht industry.
Oh, wow. Tell us more about how that works.
Well, it's quite astounding to hear how many big jets are sold to private users. It's more than 300 jets per year, big jets, which are refitted, of course, for personal use, and they have bathrooms. So the designers like to use our products because we have a lot of experience with our products being used on airplanes. And second, the super yacht industry is still booming. All the shipyards are booked out for the next 3 to 4 years. And a big yacht can sometimes have 10 to 12 bathrooms or even more. So it's quite interesting, this business.
Yeah. And sort of comparing London to, say, ISH and Frankfurt, which is the sort of, I guess, the real global mainstay of the bathroom world. Do you not sort of serve that audience at Frankfurt? Is that?
Well, I think it's a different audience. We distinguish deliberately between interior design shows and, let's say, the industry shows. The industry shows are more catering towards our distributors, potentially new distributors, to the contractors, and not so much to architects and interior designers. The interior design shows, like 100% Design, or let's say also the Salone del Mobile in Milano, they tend more to attract interior designers and architects.
Yeah.
So we are shifting our budgets and focus always between industry shows and interior design shows.
Yeah.
And here we are in London to hopefully welcome a lot of designers on our booth here.
How does that sort of affect how you present your stand at a fair in terms of who you're actually showing off to?
Well, especially when we talk about interior design shows, we focus just on novelties, because the interior designer has, let's say, knowledge about our program, about our brand, and they want to see what is new.
Yeah.
You know, they know the products which have been on the market for 10, or like the Tara, for more than 20 years, so we don't have to present that. So we focus on real novelties. Whereas in the industry shows, we mostly present our whole program.
What's the reaction been like so far?
Very well. I mean, certainly, again, a lot of people stand with their mouth and open and their eyes big in front of our sensory sky display here, because that's really is really new, and we are already in talks with some of the designers for their future projects to use this product.
Andreas Dornbrack talking to me there. Coming up after the break, we cross town and head to the 120,000 square foot of exhibition space at London's Design Junction.
You're listening to Section D on Monocle 24, our weekly program on the best in design, architecture, graphics, and fashion. Section D is brought to you by Lexus. Lexus, creating a new chapter in amazing design, technology, and driving.
The ancient practice of agriculture meets modern metropolis as we explore groundbreaking urban farms in Tokyo, Brooklyn, and Oslo. Monocle Films visits the people bringing green growth to their thriving cities.
Everywhere you look, something is growing. There's Japanese pumpkin and bitter melon dangling from trellises, and eggplant sprouting in the lobby. Tomatoes hang from a conference room ceiling, and papaya and passion fruit trees double as partitions for meeting areas.
Seeds in the City, in the Films menu on monocle.com.
This is Section D with me, Tom Morris, on Monocle 24. VW and BS, acclaimed architecture and design firm founded by Voon Wong and Benson Soar, has made a name for itself through their unique take on multiple disciplines. From their bases in Singapore, Kuala Lumpur and London, they've cast their eye to the spheres of furniture, to residential and commercial spaces, to online platforms and more. Voon Wong, one part of the design duo, joins me now. Voon, many thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
So you're a little bit more involved in Design Junction than many of the people here, aren't you? You've actually worked on a project here.
Yes, we were asked to work on the auditorium space this year. So that was quite interesting because it was kind of a balance between creating a kind of neutral enough backdrop for, you know, the seminar program and also, you know, creating a distinctive identity, you know, amongst all the different kind of things going on around in the floor space.
So how did you, what was your answer? Could you just describe us what the actual...
I think the answer for us was through lighting. I mean, we just created three very simple curved plywood screens, and through lighting between the screens and onto the screens, you know, we created different kind of atmospheres, as it were, for the seminar space.
Because you do work across many different platforms, but you're presenting new items here at the show, aren't you, as well?
Yes. On the first floor, we have a stand where we're presenting the Silt collection, which is a range of tableware in purple clay. Purple clay is a traditional ceramic used in Chinese teapots, you know, which is an unglazed ceramic. Mm. And the idea is that because it's unglazed, it has great porosity, so it takes on the flavor of the tea over time. So you don't wash it with detergent, you just rinse it. So we created, and this has, you know, always been sort of interpreted in quite traditional forms. So we interpreted this in, you know, more contemporary set of tableware, and we actually created a set for coffee rather than tea. And we actually worked with a coffee consultant here in London to create a special recipe for coffee. So the coffee, I'm told, because I'm not a coffee expert, is slightly between coffee and tea. So, you know, it's slightly more delicate than your average coffee. You know, so it's it has a little bit of the in-between about it.
How does Design Junction rate as a trade show? I mean, it's one of the most important, don't you think, now?
I love Design Junction. I think it's one of the most exciting shows in London. You know, there is obviously a very kind of a commercial element, you know, anchored by the 100% design show in Earl's Court. But, you know, Design Junction is where you find these sort of the smaller brands, the more independent brands. You know, you find the more kind of cutting edge voices being exhibited here. So I think it's a great place to kind of see what's going on and see what the next things are going to be.
The international balance, how does sort of London rate? I know you've just come back from showing in Singapore. Mm.
How does London Design Week really sort of, how is it one of the most important to you as a designer showing your wares?
Well, I think there is a lot of design talent obviously comes out of UK and from London, you know, because of the design schools here. Mm. So there are a lot of, although there might not be a lot of manufacturing here, but I think a lot of the creativity stems from the UK. So I think, you know, in that sense, I think London, the London Design Festival is pretty important.
What else are you excited about for the rest of the week?
A couple of other shows I think are really kind of interesting as well. I mean, apart from, you know, 100% Design, obviously, which, you know, has, again, you know, it's kind of, I believe they've changed hands recently, so it's a, you know, different look to the show. But there's also Tent London, and obviously there are lots of, you know, showroom openings across the city, which are, you know, are always interesting.
There does seem to be a real, with London, there's a lot of academic things to see. There's amazing, you know, workshops and forums and things. Are you excited about seeing any of those? Will you get a chance? Or
hopefully I get a chance to visit the V&A as well. I believe there are a couple of events going on there. So I'm pretty excited about how the idea of, you know, very kind of contemporary installations is taking place in a place where there's so much study of applied arts is going on. So I think that's pretty interesting.
It's a fact of life for many a contemporary designer that your work will stretch from one field to another, hopping from one sphere to the next. From the small to the large bespoke items to interiors and events, our next guest, Kyla McCullum, through her Foldability studio in East London, continues this theme of mixed skill sets, diverse disciplines and multiple platforms for her design. Kyla joins me now. Welcome to Section D, Kyla.
Thanks.
So, tell us what you're showing this year.
I'm launching a lighting collection. It's called the Sinope Collection, which is a series of 6 origami lighting designs. So each one is hand-folded and pieced together completely by hand.
Wow. So origami is your sort of your USP, isn't it? How did you set off on that skill set?
It started when I was studying abroad in Cologne as part of my master's, and we got asked to design a treehouse, and we had sort of group research, and me and another guy turned up with just hundreds of pictures of origami. I don't really know where it came from, but I just got a bit obsessed, and then just project after that, it just kept cropping up, and then, yeah, I'm just a bit addicted. I don't know why, yeah.
Is it difficult?
No, I find that's the thing.
It looks difficult.
I think that's why I enjoy it so much. It works well with the way my brain is. Like, I can imagine how things will look from sort of flat 2D form before I create them in 3D. So that's what I quite like with origami. It's almost like pattern making or something,
yeah.
Like that you can plan in advance what something will turn out like.
Yeah. Well, what sort of things have you made with origami? I mean, you mentioned the lights you're showing here, but what else have you done?
After that treehouse, I made a skirt from 67 books, hand-folded books.
Wow.
So that was like 20,000 hand-folded pages. And after that, I've done packaging, did a bit of set design recently.
Oh, really?
Logo for a photo shoot and business card holders, little bits and bobs like that as well. But I'd really like to get into more large-scale things, like large-scale set design and perhaps for like fashion, photography and... Yeah.
So it's a real skill that can sort of be adapted to many different things.
Yeah, definitely.
How big's your team? Or is it just you folding?
Just now there's 4 people. They work with me every now and again, not full time or anything, but it depends on the job really. I just sort of hire people on a freelance basis.
I mean, origami folding it's a real craft. How have you sort of noticed how craft is important to the design world? Do you think it is? I mean, it's just something, you know, making with your hands. Do you think it's a thing that's become more and more important?
I think it's nice, it adds something personal. Like, I really enjoy people's work where you can see that they're so kind of passionate about making and not just the design part. Like, I think there's something different from producing products yourself, and I don't know, you sort of come across things that you don't expect when you start, like when you started out. Like with the lighting collection that I've made, I found a few models on the internet that I started to make, and then once I learned this one folding technique, I realised like that could be transformed into this other technique that could make like 40 different shapes, and then once I made those 40 shapes, I realised you could make 100 different shapes from the same piece. And so I wouldn't really come across that if I'd had in mind exactly what I wanted and sent it off for somebody else to produce. So
yeah,
I think that's definitely...
Yeah.
There's something in the hand-making, doing it yourself.
Do you see this whole week as a sort of opportunity for you to really, you know, be inspired by other things showing, or is it
when I'm not showing, it is definitely like I love just going around trying to see as many things as possible. Last year, when every day of the festival while it was open, but when you're exhibiting yourself, it's a bit hard because you're trying to, you want to meet people, you want to show your work, and if you're not there to talk to people that come to your stand, then it, you might, I don't know, it's nicer, I think it's more personal if you're actually there to meet people in person.
Carla, thank you very much for joining us on Section D.
Thank you.
Now from the diverse to the more specific, we head into homeware and gifts designed by duo Joff and Ollie for their collection Lane. One of the more UK-centric design brands at the event, many of Lane's products are made from sustainable paper, heralding from one of the oldest and last remaining paper mills in the UK. Joff joins us now. So what are you showing this year? It's your first time at Design Junction,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's our first time at Design Junction. Very excited about it. It looks like a great show. And we're showing a range of things. We're showing a range of core hand-pulled screen prints, which is really where we started. But we're introducing a couple of new products this year. The main one really is the sort of the twin tone lampshade, which we're very proud of and very excited about. So we'll see what kind of response we get.
What's the sort of pressure for a brand to come to an event like this and produce new stuff and to really sort of, you know, wow the audience?
To be honest, for us, it's no real pressure. We have kind of quite a philosophical attitude towards kind of developing products. We develop them when they're ready to go. It's as simple as that. And we take our time, we get it right. And if that means kind of, you know, launching it, you know, in 2012, we launched in 2012, means launching in 2013, which launched in 2013. I think it's really important, though, from an inspiration point of view, to kind of come to these events and see what's out there. Because when you're busy, it's very easy to kind of sit in your studio and beaver away and not get out and talk to people, not see what's happening. So in that respect, it's more of a kind of a creative inspiration pressure to do it. But commercially, it's also important as well.
Yeah.
So I've done quite a few shows in the past, everything from Designer's Block, 100% Design, and a few of the smaller ones. And to be honest, I'm really impressed with this year. I think the build-up's been fantastic.
Mm.
There's been great press going on, and it looks great. The quality of exhibitors seems really good as well, which is something, you know, for me is kind of really important. I'm often disappointed if I go to the show and, you know, it's not so great. But yeah, I think there's a lot of energy behind it. And I can really, you know, if it's not already, you know, the lead show, I can see it evolving in that direction.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us a little bit more about Lane. I mean, the brand's only a year and a half old, isn't it? But you two have been sort of partners in crime for quite a while.
Yeah, me and Ollie have been working together for 12 years and really started out life designing a lot of stuff for art galleries and museums. So a lot of our inspiration comes from really, you know, working, you know, with contemporary art, which is the main area that we've kind of worked in the past. And really we wanted to put together a kind of a brand which is, you know, very graphically led. That's what we are fundamentally, are graphic designers. But also kind of draw on a lot of our personal inspiration. So really one of the starting points was kind of European modernism, really.
Wow.
You know, from the 50s and 60s, because it's kind of something that sort of didn't really happen in Britain. You know, it's sort of, you look at British modernism, it's kind of incredibly understated. But if you look at the graphic design of people like Max Huber or architects or furniture designers like Gio Ponti, there's a very exciting kind of dynamic aesthetic about it, and that's kind of what our stuff is inspired from. However, we're not attempting to be a kind of a retro brand. You know, we want to sort of really be a kind of modern interpretation of that. So that's, I suppose, where the creative inspiration is from. But from from a manufacturing point of view, we're very sustainably conscious. We're very conscious about making sure that we can make things within very short geographical distance. So we want to reduce our road miles, trying to avoid waste in terms of kind of unnecessary packaging. And we love working with kind of interesting manufacturers and producers and, you know, kind of artisans. And you know, because we've made a lot of stuff in the past, you know, through our existing design business, it's kind of, you know, we like to kind of partner with people who can do interesting things, who can do techniques which are very difficult to find, you know. And certainly the screen prints are, you know, an example of that. So
what sort of examples of people have you collaborated with? I mean, I know you did something with Margaret Howell, didn't you?
Weirdly enough, in such a, you know, short space of time, we've had some, you know, great collaborations. The first one was with David Mellor, the famous British cutler. And that came from sort of really initially, we were actually designing a book which had a lot of his content in. And and we ended up interviewing him for the book. And from that, he asked us, we showed him his prints, and they asked us to put together some prints for our anniversary, which was, you know, a lovely job to do, and it celebrated three of their key designs. And then last year we got a chance to work with Margaret Howe, which has produced some stationery for them. They just really liked what we produced. We've got an entirely sort of made in England sort of stationery range, and that really ties into their, you know, their sort of ethos, and also their kind of very pared down aesthetic. So hopefully, you know, that will continue on to other products. And we're also working with a company called Romo, who are, you know, a big international fabric company, and the son of the owner, Jordan, has started a new sort of wing of the business, and he's sort of really excited about what we do, and so consequently we're collaborating on a sort of a range of fabric which is currently being turned into cushions. So
that launches next month?
Yes, it's going to launch in October, because it's being run by kind of Romo. They're really pushing it through their own fairs rather than ours.
Well, fantastic.
Yeah.
Geoff, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Good luck with the rest of the show.
Now, while some enjoy the solitude of creativity, the protection of one's own brand, others, like our next guest, are not afraid to combine forces to raise the profile of the work. The founder of furniture design brand Channels, Samuel Chan, has now harnessed the creativity of a large collective of designers for a new collection launching at London Design Festival. Simon Pengley, Wales & Wales, Fresh West, Sean Yu, Henrik Sorig and Chan himself are some of the minds behind the collection, known as Join & Jointed. I'm delighted to say Samuel Chan joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So tell us a bit about this sort of big collective collection.
Yeah, it's a new brand that I gather together with six fellow designers together. They're all good mates of mine for many years. I was trained as a furniture designer in UK. So I have this idea that gather all the designers and produce furniture, and then we are all passionate with timber furniture. So all the furniture produced in our own workshop. So basically, we design the furniture, manufacture in our own workshop facilities, and then we sell it online.
How did you go about, I mean, you said they're all your friends, but how did you go about cherry picking from your designer friends who you sort of asked to be in the...
I think six of us, we all share a similar interest. I say, you know, we all love wooden furniture, and all these years, you know, I have been observed, you know, their work, and yeah, we are very similar. We share the attention to detail, you know, we are passionate what we are doing. So when I had this idea, I invite them to come and meet me together. Yeah, they all say to me, good idea, let's do it together.
And they're all from all around the world, aren't they?
Yes, one from Norway, one from Denmark, one from America, and the rest are from UK.
Do you sort of ever feel nervous about launching something like that at a big event like this with sort of the world media?
Well, we have done quite a lot of market research, and also I have been involved in the furniture business for over 20 years.
Yeah.
I set up my own company Channels as a retail company. So this time we decided to set up Join & Jointed as an online furniture business. We believe that the concept that we have, the market will respond to that.
And yet, I guess you come here to sort of see people face to face, both the media, buyers, just the general sort of furniture lovers. Why Design Junction?
I have been involved with Design Junction from day one. We were the first 10 company that exhibit in Milan with Design Junction. To me, it's like part of the family. You know, we see how this show grow, you know, and yeah, it's brilliant. You know, that from original 10 company, now it grow, develop to what we are today.
Yeah.
Exciting time.
Have you had a chance to look around yet?
Not yet. We've been so busy in our stand, and then we've been a lot of journalists and reporters are interviewing us. Yeah, they are very excited about this new brand.
I mean, it's sort of early days, but there's a real, real buzz here at Design Junction. What do you think makes this very different in the London design scene, but also internationally? What is the sort of
appeal? What makes this so different to a lot of other shows is, I think, although we have different stand, different company, but we all gel together. We all work together. I mean, you should see the preparation before the show.
Of course.
Okay? Although we are all represent different company, but we work together. Okay? The guy next to my stand, he asked me, hey, can you help me to hold the ladder for a while? Yeah, do it. No problem. You know, I think this is part of the beauty of this exhibition.
Yeah.
You know, and I enjoy it very much. I think it's going to be a big success this year.
What else are you excited about over the next couple of days about seeing, if you have time to?
Well, I'm very excited about, you know, I mean, there's a lot of new design coming up. I mean, you can see around the exhibitions, you know, a lot of freshly graduate, you know, they have the opportunity to display an exhibition like this. I think it's an eye-opener, you know, not just for the public and also for the young graduate as well. So it's a good opportunity.
And that was Samuel Chan rounding off our special Section D episode on the London Design Festival. Tune in next week for the last of our selected Design Festival interviews and exhibits of the designs and products that will prevail beyond September. Today's show is produced by Aled John and edited by Holly Fisher. You can contact the producer Aled at awj@monocle.com if you'd like to feature on Section D. I'm Tom Morris. To play you out, as the sun goes down on another London Design Festival, here's the Kinks with Waterloo Sunset. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.